You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Initiation Science and the Development of the Human Mind, Collected Works, Volume 228. And this is part four. If you were heard the previous reading of the report Steiner gave, I said at the end of that it existed between parts 4 and 5. I misspoke. It's between parts 3 and 4. And so now I'm starting part 4, which is entitled The Druid Priest's Sun Initiation and His Perception of the Moon Spirits. Lecture 5, given in Dornoch on the 10th of September, 1923. First of all, I would remind you of some of the things I mentioned in the lectures on the spiritual nature of our planetary system, which I gave here before I went away, going in more detail into the things to which I referred briefly yesterday. Reference had been made, in a more spiritual sense, to something you have known for a long time, from what I wrote in my title Occult Science, An Outline, also known as An Outline of Esoteric Science. We know that Earth evolution is inwardly connected with the evolution of Sun and Moon. From many different points of view, the one considered in Occult Science and Outline is but one of them, I pointed out that at a certain very early stage of our planetary system, Sun, Moon, and Earth, and indeed the rest of the planets, though we won't go into that now, were a single whole, and we must, in a sense, speak of the Sun departing from, moving out of the whole, Sun, Moon, Earth, with the Moon then departing at a much later time. All these things do, of course, have their outer aspect, which derives from ideas based on the senses, as it were. But they do also have an inner aspect, which is that particular spirits are connected with either form of existence, Sun existence and Moon existence. Spirits which had separated from that whole, as the Sun separated from the Earth, and gained an existence of a wholly different kind. For the subsequent evolution of Earth, we, therefore, cannot speak only of a separate Sun having physical effects and etheric influences on the Earth. When we also consider the spiritual aspect of the cosmos, we must speak of a Sun population, of Sun spirits, which were connected with Earth evolution in the past, and now are outside this earthly evolution, existing in a way that goes far beyond earthly existence and is much more sublime. The same holds true for the Moon population, as we may call them. In discussing the spiritual aspects of such cosmic events, we also had to say that at one time an original wisdom existed within Earth evolution. This did not, of course, consist of concepts flying about in the air, but came from spirits which did not assume a physical body the way human beings do, but did, nevertheless, live in human beings, because human beings had developed instinctive clairvoyant powers. The wisdom came from the spirits which continued their existence on the Moon once the body of the Moon had separated from the Earth. As I said in that earlier lecture, therefore, one has to say that within the Moon entity, not in the sunlight reflected by the Moon, nor in anything else which the Moon reflects from the universe, within the inner part of this Moon entity live the spirits which had once established the original wisdom among human beings on Earth. Later these spirits entered into the myths, legends, the whole mythology, assuming the form of images which are no longer explicable to the ordinary human mind. These are elements of original wisdom, which we look back on in wonder, though we only find them to be the true basis of the myths, legends, and so on, in an external way. The powers of today's human intellect will only fight their way through to that original wisdom with great effort, by developing vision in images, inspiration, and intuition again. However, something of an unconscious memory remained of all that was once bound up with the earth, at least within humanity itself. At different stages in the development of human civilization, and I am certainly including the earlier periods of civilization, these unconscious memories would then come up in human feeling, in the whole human state of soul. Looking at civilization in general, we may therefore speak of a sun type and a moon type civilization. Those are memories coming to mind of something which did in earlier times work in human beings in a more comprehensive sense, like forces of nature. And anything of which human beings were sentient in this respect was but like an adjunct, reminiscent of powers of growth or powers of internal organization. If we now bring to mind what I have told you of my visit to England, we can pick up the thread of yesterday, and basing ourselves on the ideas we thus gained, enter a bit into the Druid culture of which I spoke yesterday, more in its outer aspect. Traces of this are notably to be found in the regions where the lecture course of which I spoke yesterday was held. The tools external science has available today will not answer the question as to the state of mind and soul in which these Druid priests lived. I could equally well call them Druid scholars, for these terms are entirely appropriate for those times, though of course they did not then have such terms. What lived in the impulses by means of which they guided their congregation? In history we often hear something which we hear only too often, and it always really signifies something which was astir in times of decline, of decadence. Here I want to speak of something which always relates to something which came before these periods of decline, something alive in the flowering period. For these cromlechs, these sun circles, of which I spoke yesterday, do very much remind us, in what they truly are, of the way things were there when the Druid mysteries were in their flowering period. Footnote: the term cromlech has two meanings, grave chamber and circle of standing stones. Today it refers mainly to grave chambers in the British Isles and to stone circles or standing stones in Brittany. End of footnote. Using the means which anthroposophical spiritual science puts at our disposal, we can even today enter into the way in which those Druid priests served their people. In a way, they were everything to their people, or rather their tribes. They provided for the people's religious needs, insofar as one can speak of such in those earlier times. They were the authority for the social impulses. They also determined the healing method of that time. They united in themselves all the things which later were divided up among many branches of civilized human life. The only way of looking at this Druid culture, which is what we may indeed call it, is to consider the important aspects of it in a period that came before the one from which those mythological ideas echo across to us from the north. The mythologies connected with the name Woden or Odin. The aspects connected with the name Woden essentially belong to a time which came after this period when Druid culture was in flower. In the circle of wisdom, we might say, which points to the name Woden or Odin, we have to see something of a circle of wisdom which initially came from the east, from a mystery circle located in the region of the Black Sea. This then poured its spiritual content from east to west, with mystery centers established in many different ways as colonies, in a way all the way from the Black Sea to the west. all of it shown into a sublime culture, sublime in a deeper sense, into original wisdom, Druid wisdom. The wisdom of the Druids was in fact an unconscious echo, something of an unconscious memory of everything which the earth had received from sun and moon before sun and moon separated from it. In the Druid mysteries, initiation was essentially a sun initiation, and connected with the element which, through sun initiation, would then become moon wisdom. What was the real intention behind these cromlechs, these Druid circles? From what I said yesterday, you will realize that essentially they were intended for the study of the relationship between earth and sun. Looking at the individual sites, we find that they are really some kind of instrument used to cut out the external physical effects of the sun. The initiate, with the gift of a seer, would then be able to observe such sun influences as remained in the area of darkness. With the aid of the cromlechs, the Druid priest observed the inner qualities of the sun's light, and how they were reflected back into the cosmos from the earth. I would therefore like to say that the physical nature of the sun's light was held off. As I told you yesterday, a dark space was created by placing the stones in the ground and a covering stone on top. With the power of seeing through the stones, it was then possible to observe the spiritual essence of the sun's light in that dark space. So the Druid priest, standing before his altar, would be considering the inner qualities of sun nature, insofar as he needed what would flow into him there, full of wisdom. But it flowed into him in such a way that the wisdom was still like a force of nature. The priest would consider the things he needed to govern his congregation. You must understand, of course, that we are speaking of a time when you could not look in the calendar to know when one must sow in the right way, when one should entrust this or that seed grain to the soil. Their calendar was something which the priest read in the sun effects. People did not pick up a book to inform themselves about time. The only book available was the universe itself. And the letters which made up the words came from observations as to how the sun influenced one thing or another that had been set up as a device. Today, if you want to know something, you look it up in a book. Then the Druid priest would look to see what the sun was doing at his cromlechs. There he would read the secrets of the universe. He would know when wheat, rye, and so on should be sown from what he read there. These are just examples. The priest would read the impulses that came from the universe for everything that was done in those days. The major impulses needed to complete the calendar for the year came from observations made in the shadow cast in the Druid circle. In those days, therefore, when there was nothing that had come from human intellect, the universe itself was one and all. Instead of printing presses, they had the cromlechs to coax the secrets out from the universe. Reading the cosmic book in this way, as it were, one was working with sun nature, sun quality, and they were sentient of moon nature or moon quality being the opposite of sun quality. The powers that had concentrated in the moon at that time had once been connected with the earth. They did not depart completely, however, for they left something behind them in the earth. If there were only sun powers, then only proliferating, growing cells would develop. For instance, all life would always arise with small or large cell character, variety, with things configured out, does not come from the sun powers, but from the moon powers that work together with the sun powers. The situation was that when the Druid priest exposed himself to whatever his circles, his cromlechs, would yield, he did not only get the abstract impression, which we do quite rightly get today when we concern ourselves intellectually with things of the spirit. The powers of the sun would speak directly to the priest. The spiritual sun, quality, would have an immediate influence in the shadow cast by the sun, and would influence him with much greater intensity than a sensory perception does on us today, for much more profound powers were involved. The priest would stand before his ritual site and observe this sun quality. As he did so, his breathing would change, growing lifeless, blunted, wavering, so that one breath would merge into the next. With the part of himself which, as a human being, he was, thanks to his breathing, the priest would live in the sun influence he encountered there. This did not give him abstract knowledge, but something which acted in him the way the blood circulation acts, inwardly pulsing through him, stirring up his human nature, even at the physical level. But this influence, which went as far as the physical aspect, did also have a spiritual part. It was the inner stirrings that he experienced that actually were his knowledge. We have to think of this knowledge in a much more living, intensive way as living experience. The priest would also only gain such knowledge at particular times. It could be aroused at every noontide, but in reduced strength. But when it was a question of the major secrets being revealed, the priest had to expose himself to these influences at the time that we call St. John's Tide today. Then the great wave would join the small waves of his knowledge that came daily. Experiencing the sun influences in this special artistic way on earth, the priest felt this to be his initiation, the sun initiation. And this enabled him to study and understand the powers left behind as moon powers when the moon separated from the earth. That would then be his knowledge of nature, gained under the influence of his sun initiation. Anything revealed to him on the surface of things was not important to him. The moon powers of the earth, with which billowed up from below, they were important to him. Through the initiation principle, traces of which still remain even today in these memorials, the priest gained the power of insight, and he would perceive what is at work in nature, particularly when the night sky let the stars emerge above the earth, and the moon moved through the heavens. The sun initiation gave him the spiritual aspect, the spiritual impulse, and this gave him his knowledge of nature. His natural science was a moon science. He was sentient of the moon powers that were behind this. Shining up from the depths of the earth in the plants, they were active in wind and weather and the other elements. He would be sentient of these, sentient not in the abstract way in which we are sentient of the forces of nature with our earthly science today. He would be sentient of them as very much active and alive, such being their nature. In the living experience gained there, the priest would be sentient of these being the elemental spirits which lived in the plants, in the stones, in everything. These elemental spirits, their dwelling places being in the trees, in the plants, and so on, were kept within limits, but those limits were not as narrow as those set for human beings today. For instance, they were wider. This is how the Druid priest, with his moon science of nature, was able to see how these elemental spirits could grow to their full size, turning into giants. This led to perception of the giants, known as the Jotnar. Looking into the root sphere of a plant underground, where moon nature lived, one would see the elemental within its proper limits, bracket, Drawing on the Board, Tafel Plate 7 in Wand Tafelzeichnungen, Volume 13, close bracket. Readers aside, Jotnar is spelled J O umlaut T N A R, and I'm pronouncing that Jotnar probably is more accurate. End of readers aside. But those elementals were wanting to go forth and grow outwardly to giant size. When the elementals of this type, which brought such benefit to the root region, grew out into giants, they turned into the frost giant, with the frost their outer symbol. They lived in everything that moves across the earth as destructive hoarfrost or other kinds of devastating frosts. Root powers of plants let loose, lived in frost and hoar and in everything that passed across the earth in giant strides with devastating effect. Yet in the root sphere they were of great benefit. The element of leaf growth could also grow to giant size. It would then live as elemental spirit magnified to giant size in the drifting fogs or mists that passed across the earth with everything it contained at certain times of the year, bearing the pollen of plants and so forth. And when the principle which lives in a gentle, modest way in the flowering powers of plants grows to giant size, it turns into devastating fire. Meteorological events were thus seen as elemental powers, which, in the natural world, lived within their proper limit, having grown to giant size. The very sites chosen for these ancient pagan places of worship show that the things, which on the one hand were given through sun circles and dolmen, were then developed further in the earthly insight and perception they had made possible, developed in such a way that one was able to observe in the right way the mysterious movements and activities, flow and life of wind and weather, the way the elements of water and air, the hoarfrost welling forth from the soil, and the dew work together. Sun initiation and moon spirit insight thus gave rise to that most ancient idea, which I'd like to say we find to be part of the basis of European civilization. The Druid priest would thus read anything his devices and his sun initiation permitted him to read from the cosmos, and the knowledge he was then stimulated by this sun initiation able to gain from his moon science. The whole of social and religious life was also bound up with this. For the things the priest was able to say to people were something which extended to the spiritual basis of the world in which they were. It is easiest to see this if one considers the healing knowledge which the priests had. On the one hand, they would see the elemental spirits held within their limits in the various things to be found in the mineral world, the plant world, and so on. They would observe what happened with plants when these were exposed to frost, let us say, when they were exposed to the forces which the storm giants, the wind giants, carry through the air, when they were exposed to the boiling heat of the fire giants. In studying what the hoarfrost giants, the frost giants, the storm giants, the fire giants would do to plants if let loose, they found their own way of taking plants, and within limits, imitate the effects that the giants achieved in nature, to subject plants to a specific process, such as freezing, cooling, combustion, dissolving, and binding. The Druid priests would say to themselves, quote, "Looking into the natural world, we see the devastating actions of the frost giants, the storm giants, the fire giants. But we can take what these giants, these Jotnar, spread about the world in their ungainly way. We can take this away from them. We can confine these moon powers that have been let loose within narrower limits again." Close quote. They produced their medicines, healing herbs, and so on, by studying and making use of the things that happened when the soil was thawing, what happened in a storm, in the wind, in the boiling heat of the sun, applying the same principles to the sun quality that lived in the plants and which they had received with their initiation. Those medicines were based on the giants being reconciled with the gods. In those days, every medicine bore witness to the reconciliation between the enemies of the gods and the gods themselves. Foods were taken in under the immediate sun and moon influence, as nature offered them. A medicine was produced by a human being who would take the things nature did further, taming the power of giants to make it serve the power of the sun. You see, this whole way of living is only thinkable if there is no intellectualized inner knowledge, not a trace of it. When everything one wants to know is perceived as spirit coming to expression in the phenomena of nature themselves, or in what can be learned from natural phenomena with the initiation principle, using special devices, when everything is read in the book of the cosmos itself, only then is such a life, such a kind of civilization possible. We have to think of this civilization as spread out across large parts of northern and central Europe about 3 or 3.5 millennia ago. Nothing existed then that was similar to writing. Only this cosmic script existed. And coming from the east, initially from a mystery center in the region of the Black Sea, something spread there which our ordinary mind can no longer grasp, which is now to be found in the Norse mythology which relates to Woden. What actually is Woden? The mystery from which this Woden culture arose was a mystery of Mercury, a mystery which added the impulses of Mercury to those of sun and moon. We might say that this ancient culture was in a state of innocence and naivety in the luster of sun and moon, untouched by the things that could be told to humanity through the Mercury impulses. These existed only over in the east at that time. From there they spread to the west, colonizing. Woden Mercury spread his influence to the west. This also casts a light on the way in which Woden is said to have brought the skill of runes, the writing in runes. He was therefore seen as the giver of what human beings brought forth themselves as the skill of deciphering the universe, initially in a very primitive intellectualistic way. That was the first intellectualistic element, the Woden element. So we may say that Mercury quality, Woden quality, had been added to sun and moon quality. Where this Woden element really entered as a full impulse, it would have an influence on all earlier experiences. Let me read that sentence again. Where this Woden element really entered as a full impulse, it would have an influence on all earlier experiences. Everything was in a way tinged, given a certain impulse coming from this Woden quality. For there was one particular secret of Druid culture. Things will, of course, germinate, come up everywhere, even in places where they do not belong. Weeds also grow in the fields. In Druid civilization, only sun and moon qualities were considered, quote, good herbage, close quote, of their culture. If it happened that the intellectualistic principle came up ahead of time, then it would be considered a weed. Among the many different medicines which the Druids had was also one to treat brooding, the Mercury quality. It may seem paradoxical to people today, but they had a remedy for broodiness, for getting wrapped up in one's own inner life, the state of one's own soul. The Druids wanted people to live with nature, not getting wrapped up in themselves. They considered someone sick even if he merely tried somehow to reflect nature in a primitive art, except perhaps by imitating it, or if he tried to produce signs. Someone who produced signs was sick and had to be cured. Such a person would then be considered to be a black soul, not a white one. Indeed, if we, in our present state of knowledge, had been transported into Druid civilization, we would all have ended up in hospital being cured. And then the Woden civilization brought this disease across from the East. It was felt to be a disease, this Woden civilization. It brought the element which earlier on had presented only as an abnormal broodiness, but now with a force that had itself grown enormous, gigantic. This is what it brought. It brought the ruin into something that before had only been learned from the cosmic script. It made people put their intellectualistic powers into the sign. It brought everything which was felt to be Mercury culture. No wonder, then, that something which came from this Woden culture, which was felt to be like something separated out from its best powers, the Baldur spirit, the late-born sun spirit, could not be seen together with life, but only with death. Baldur had to go to hell, into the dark powers of death, into the dwelling place of earth. Readers aside, hell is spelled H-E-L, end of readers aside. And again, something to which people had initially given the most thought, as evident still from the Edda traditions, was not how to free Baldur, this son of the Woden powers, from hell. That was really only a later idea, but how to heal him. And the way this came out was that they said they had many remedies, but there was no medicine for Baldur. For the intelligence arising from Woden's rune power must inevitably lead to death. Thus we see something again to which I have drawn your attention from different points of view before, when considering human evolution. In earlier times, human beings had instinctive insight and knew nothing of the significance of death. They remembered life before coming to earth and knew that death is merely a change to a different condition. Death was not felt to be any kind of major hiatus. Above all, death was not a tragedy in earlier times. It only became one as the mystery on Golgotha approached, and this brought the redemption from fear of death. In the Baldur legend, you have an excellent illustration of how the arrival of intellectualism created the state of soul where one takes death into account. So that is how this entered into human evolution. The death of Baldur, who could not rise again, could be healed again only in soul and spirit, when there was also the Christ figure, who would rise again from death. It is truly marvelous how up there in the north the influence of the powers of Mercury on those of sun and moon paved the way for the view of the Christ impulse. We see Baldur, the god who is subject to death and cannot rise again, as the forerunner of the Christ, who also became subject to death, but was able to rise again. This was because the Christ was coming directly from the sun. Baldur, coming from Woden, as the sun's power, was power of sun reflected by Mercury. Sun power shining out in the runes. Sun power out of the signs which human beings made using their intellect. We see how everything evolved in those northern regions, evolved clearly for us to see, for there we still see the human being as he lived, reading in the cosmos, searching the cosmos for religious, social, and healing ideas. Later humanity came to dwell with the earth's powers. The Druid priest would stand by his sacrificial stone and look to see how the sun's shadow took shape, with the spiritual aspect of the sun evident in the shadow. This he would read. Later came the time when essential sun nature, captured, as it were, in the dolmens, the cromlechs, was drawn in abstract lines called rays, a dreadful thing to say when a higher view is taken. And we approach the time when the relationship of the life in root and leaf and flower, with the life in frost, wind, and fire, was only seen in chemical terms. The giants and the elemental spirits have changed into forces of nature. Yet the forces of nature contain nothing but those giants of old. It is just that people do not realize this and feel enormously superior. The forces of nature have evolved in a straight line from the giants. They are the late-born offspring. Today we live in a culture that is wholly derivative. When the eye, EYE, is directed to those wholly dilapidated remnants of Druid times, we must really feel deeply touched. It is as if we were looking at the distant ancestry of our present-day life. Let us go into some detail. Today we speak in a strangely abstract way also of medicines, very intellectualistically, describing the methods of manufacture in a completely abstract way. We have to think of it transformed into something full of life, if we want to look back on the way in which the Druid priest considered his medicines. He would be sentient of the sun powers, with which he was familiar, and which he treated in plants and other products of nature, using the powers of the giants. This was wholly alive to him. He elicited the powers for transforming the plant into a medicament from the giants. He knew that with this he was doing something for the whole cosmos, and he would then look at the human being. His special insight into human nature allowed him to see how, with the dream images that came, an indefinite unconscious flickering up of deeper human nature, dawning awareness, those things had their actions under the means of taming the giant's powers which had been placed in the inner human being. On the one hand, he had his Loki, out there in the wild conflagrations. And on the other hand, he had the principles he had taken from Loki that allowed him to transform one plant or another in a combustion process. The way in which this took effect within the human being would show him the Loki power within the human being. It had been disarmed. And he would say to himself, quote, when something which can mean devastation, a threatening danger out there in the world of the giants, is introduced into the inner human being, in the right way, then it will heal. Close quote. The powers which poisons have on the large scale can be healing if taken to the right place. The priest thus had his own way of gaining insight into nature's different powers, forces, and modes of action. He had entered into the spirit, and thanks to this, sent religious, social, medical, and other impulses out into his congregation. The initiates of those early times thus preserved the ancient wisdom that the moon spirits had cultivated for as long as they themselves were still on earth. The wisdom was no longer immediately available when the moon spirits had departed with the moon, but the initiates explored and established it with the help of a kind of sun initiation in the way that I have described to you today. That's the end of Lecture 5, and that is the end of Part 4, which consists only of that one lecture. Translated by Anna Moyse.